Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going well.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It's one of those Tuesday mornings where I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's keep going.
That's what you're thinking today?
Yeah, I am. Yep. I'm feeling a little bit like my energy is not at 100%. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, but that's okay.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
My energy is not at 100%.
No.
You know what I've noticed? The sun has come out today, but this morning it was cloudy and we've had such little cloud cover over the last month.
Well, yeah, I felt that on Sunday with the rain. It was so funny how inconvenient it was to have rain all day. I'm like, we've just been really spoiled with beauty every day. But yeah, I mean, right now looking out this window, it is beautiful, like the reds and all the colors on the trees. And
they're all going to fall, though, and then you have to break them up.
We're going to pay for this beauty.
You're gonna pay for it.
There, now I'm awake.
People haven't been listening for a while. They don't know that inside joke.
I need that.
We'll pay for it.
Well, yeah, but they don't. They've experienced it if they live here. Yeah. They know. They know what we're getting at.
I mean, obviously, like a lot of people, I love this time of year, but it is, I think this has been a particularly beautiful fall, and it's just a reminder of just enjoying it. I think like one of the things that I get struck by with the fall is it can feel tempting to think, oh yeah, but it won't last for very long. But it's such a great lesson to learn that, yeah, everything in this life is temporary. Like whether we realize it is or if it's not, or we don't think it is, it is. And the answer to that is not to stress about what it's going to be like when we don't have it, but just to enjoy the gift of it in that day. And that can be really difficult, especially when it's something like fall. But it's so interesting. Like if you imagine going to a game, you know, like a Packers game or something like that, like how weird it would be if in the, you know, first 5 minutes of the game, you're like, yeah, but it's going to be over soon. Like another 2.5 hours and it's going
to. Yeah, it's what happens to a lot of us. Like that same dynamic happens when you're like in the summer, you're on a vacation for a week or two or whatever.
Yeah.
And you get to like the second to last day and you start to feel that.
Yeah.
And that is a really interesting moment of like, that is the tension that we live with where like fall is beautiful and amazing. Yet there's this sense of, yeah, but it won't last. But yeah, I think that's where we have to decide. I'm going to enjoy it every moment I have it.
Yeah.
And when we don't get it, I think, you know, when it goes away and the winter sets in, you know, for me at least, the first few snowfalls, I'm really excited about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's just when March comes around and it's still here where I'm like, okay, all right, let's move on.
March feels like the end is coming. February is like, man,
yeah.
February.
Yeah, it can get long. But it is like such a good reminder that like this world, you know, sometimes we can overemphasize in our hearts like the brokenness of it. If we forget the brokenness, we'll be surprised, but it's also still beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's also still good and wonderful. And I think that when you feel that with the seasons changing, that's actually a good moment of learning where you can learn that tension. Like this isn't going to be forever, but it's still really good right now.
And we're going into a season of no bugs.
Yeah, that's true.
That's so great.
Never mind. I won't share that.
No,
with you.
Did you
not going to share
it. I mean, we have like those beetles.
Yep.
Like right now or whatever.
We
it's
do.
The seven plagues of Northeast Wisconsin. And they're they kind of bring up the
they look like ladybugs, but they're not.
Yeah,
right?
They're not. And but we are to a place. So for by and large, you don't have to worry about black flies and.
No.
Oh no! Were you gonna say something about a tick?
No, I was not. I'm not gonna go there.
You did. You found a tick on your dog.
Well, okay, I'll tell you fast.
That's okay.
This will be good for all the dog owners to be aware of if you didn't know. So you know, in the spring they were horrible.
Yes.
But in the last like couple months, they've really been not bad. Well, I took Augie into the woods on my day off this last week. Came home, didn't think anything of it. He was laying down. About a half hour after we got home, I went over. There were like 9 ticks on his head, like crawling on his face. Because he's really a light, he's a real light-colored lab.
Oh, wow.
So I could get them off, but just a warning that they are out again in the woods. So if you have a dog especially. I didn't find any on me, but I mean, they're out.
Look, years ago, I did research and I realized and I learned that ticks are still there even in the winter.
Yep, they are.
They're just not as prevalent and they're not as, you know, so it's rare that you're going to find a tick on you if you're out in the woods in the winter. But part of the reason is because you've got heavier clothes on, like you're not. So
I was really surprised because I haven't found any on them for a couple months. I mean, we treat them and stuff, but yeah, kind of a bummer.
Why would you have to do that?
I'm sorry. I tried to hold it back, Jay.
All right, let's try to re-energize this and talk about your sermon on Sunday.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Remember the mustard seed. Man, this was one of those messages for me where I had to intentionally restrain myself from adding like 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th application point because I feel like this idea is so important for our lives and really living right where we are and not overlooking the small things that each day God is calling us into and leading us into. And both the things that can feel encouraging, but also I've been thinking even post-sermon now about the things that are going on in our lives and we feel like we've taken steps to address them. Whatever it is, you can think of a relational conflict or some injustice that you feel, that you see, and we've taken a small step maybe of faithfulness, and that's really beautiful, yet we don't see the fruit yet. And I made that point at the end of the sermon, but I didn't have time to draw it out, and I've just been thinking more the last couple of days about how important that idea is. So we remember the mustard seed in that moment and realize we don't necessarily get to see the result all the time of our acts of faithfulness, but we need to keep, like, as we remember the mustard seed, entrusting ourselves to the good Father and the King of the kingdom. I just think that's the tension we live in a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when, so if you buy into the idea, hey, let's look local, let's look right where we are. Let's start with our homes and then our neighborhoods. And then when you're conscious of that and you're being intentional about seeking the kingdom where you are, you will see things that are not okay in a way that you don't if you just go through life. You'll start to really notice, like, well, this is really broken. This is not how it would be in the kingdom. This is not what it looks like for God's kingdom to come on earth as in heaven. And then you can take these steps, which are really important. Those are steps of obedience where we walk into that. But then there's this moment of, like, I took my step. I did what I knew to do. I worked. I mean, you might even work really hard at something, yet it's still not fixed. And that happens so often right now in the world that we're in. That is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's where I've been thinking that this remembering the mustard seed is important for those moments. In like the Corinthians passage I quoted, that your labor is not in vain when it's done in the Lord, even when you don't see what you would hope to see happening right away.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a major issue, that there is a really exciting part of the parable of the mustard seed, that all the small things do matter. Yes. So for most of us are not going to be president of the United States. Most of us are not going to be a senator. Most of us are not going to be, you know, Elon Musk or Bill Gates or someone like that. So most of us function in the small things. That's where most people in the world function. And so the parable of the mustard seed gives this incredible value to these small things. But then the flip side of that is what you just said there of, like, okay, so you get the excitement of, okay, so I can, like, small acts of faithfulness matter, and things that seem small in the world actually have huge impact in the kingdom. And so then you go and you're like, I'm going to notice everything. And then you do things and it doesn't seem like it had any impact at all. And then I think it's just hard to remind yourself or to persevere when you realize, like, just that the fruit takes a long time to grow.
Yeah, it does. And you might start, like, be tempted to ask the question, so was that worth it? Whatever the thing I did, wasn't that actually worth it? Or I think sometimes we could even doubt God, like, well, maybe he didn't call me into that. And that's not true usually. Like, God, I mean, it might be. Maybe we went out ahead of where God was going with a thing. But often, you know, the biblical witness over and over again is people who God calls to do things and the thing doesn't go how you would imagine it went.
I mean,
the Son of God's mission on earth ended in death. So it, to me, that is our example, that he was faithful in every moment, every single moment. And you would think that, you know, religious people, God's people on earth, would have responded to him with celebration, right? But no, he was rejected and crucified as a criminal. But that was part of the plan. And so I think that's part of like what God does when we start to really, I mean, part of this is being attentive, and it's countercultural in that way as well, just to slow down and be attentive to what is God doing in my home right now? What is he doing in my neighborhood right now? And then in our city. And it's a call, I think, to really be aware and to seek what would you have me do if God, you're doing something, God is active. We know that. But then what does that mean for me? And what is my call in that moment? And I do think that that's part of what it means to seek the kingdom first, is to be conscious of God is active. How can I join him in that? What is he calling me into? And that's where remembering the mustard seed matters. You know, to me, it really does help me pray. I would have liked to do an entire sermon just on prayer related to the mustard seed, because I think that it's a profound thing that God calls us into prayer. One, that Jesus calls us to pray for the kingdom to come the way he does, but then he calls us to join him in just crying out to God, the one who brings the kingdom, make it come, make it come. So every time you pray for a neighbor, or like Jesus calls us to even pray for those who from an outward perspective could act like enemies, you know, people who might want to bring harm into our life. Every time we do that, it's a radical subversive act in the kingdom of God. And those prayers do get answered. God hears them.
So I think you just touched on something that I think is really an important implication of believing in the mustard seed, is believing that, for example, you're talking about our, loving our enemies. I mean, I see that a lot in the political realm, that one of the implications of this is, do I believe that functioning in a Christ-like way right now is more important than getting the outcome that I think is influential? So I think that's one of the ways that when I was listening to this and I was thinking, like, where the rubber meets the road a lot of times for us is in that. Like, mm-hmm. We tend to say, well, yeah, in theory, it's best to be kind and gentle and to repay evil with good and all that. But there are limits to that, because if that means that we're going to let it seem like this person won this argument, or that this person then gets into office, or this person gets appointed to the Supreme Court, well, then it's not worth it. And part of the mustard seed is believing that it's those small things, that actually trusting Jesus in that moment and letting that other person get the last word, or letting it seem like, not refusing to repay evil with evil. Think about, we mentioned this last week about a political ad and how it's just constantly fighting fire with fire, right? Like, it's, you know, you can't even figure out who started it, but like every campaign goes negative at some point. And it used to be like, if I remember correctly, and maybe I don't, but if I remember correctly, they would always like start out with more positive ads, and then it would just skew more and more negative as the election got closer. And they'll always say like, well, because we have to respond, like they put a smear campaign out on us, and so we need to do it to them. And I think, a kingdom way would be to never go there, to never go to a smear campaign. And would you be willing to do that if it meant you were going to lose the election? And that's a really good example, I think, of the small thing, what seems like the small thing to the world, which would be how you functioned in that, like trusting Jesus to remain in the Spirit and abiding in him, whether it's turning the other cheek or repaying evil with good, or persecution with blessing, is that more important is that a bigger thing than the thing that seems big to the world, which would be winning the election? And that's hard.
It is really hard.
Like, we get really excited, I think, when we think, at least I do, when I think, man, everything matters. And you made that point on Sunday. And so for people to realize, wow, I can have a kingdom impact in small things, that's really exciting. Where it's hard is when we have to, when we hit those crossroads where we have to claim and we have to really be confronted with, do I actually believe that this small act of faithfulness that looks insignificant to the world is actually more important than this result that seems big in the world?
Yeah, that's exactly the tension, right? And that's where I think when we remember the mustard seed, remember that the kingdom is all about the king. So the act of faithfulness to the king, even when it doesn't result in the fruitfulness that we desire, is always more weighty than that fruitfulness that we desire. So that act of fidelity and love for the king is what this is all about, and learning that over and over and over again. And that is what in the kingdom matters. And we get to be citizens of the kingdom without being defenders of the kingdom. Like, we do not have to be, we are not meant to be like in battle the way people would imagine that battle goes. I do think there's a battle going on, a spiritual battle, but it's a battle for, are you going to be faithful to Jesus? Not a battle against enemies, whatever those enemies are perceived to be, whatever it could be, like you described, a Supreme Court justice or a politician. That's the way the world wants us to think. Every single one of those negative ads right now is meant to convey this person is evil and sinister and more horrible than you could have imagined, so you better not dare vote for them. It's not just meant to convey we disagree on policies, right? It's bigger than that. And so if you can be convinced of that, and if you believe you are somehow a defender and then a bringer of the kingdom in a way that only God is, you can be duped into thinking that that's what your role is on, in this earth. And it's not. It's not what our job is. Our job is to remain faithful to him. Like you said, even if that means if we were the candidate running and we lose the election, because small things become big things, that looks like a loss that might not be a loss. Because God does things with those small things that we, like, it will take, I think, sometimes generations to see the result of those acts of faithfulness. I mean, think about, you know, for people listening, someone that you have been praying for years, for maybe that they just know, that they know Jesus, right? That they come to know him. And you pray and you pray and you pray, and you know, after years of maybe even trying to make them believe, you know, like having the conversation, trying to somehow convince them to believe, that it is out of your control. You cannot make them believe. And I think that the repeated prayers, though, demonstrate your faith in Jesus and his worth and his worthiness. And you just don't know when God is going to, like, when the fruit of that prayer will come forth in this person's life. It can be a lifetime of praying for so many of us, for those we love. And it could be about all kinds of other circumstances as well, beyond like that major one. But I think that's the way of the kingdom, is that we get to be, I mean, it's interesting, the different metaphors that God gives us in the Bible, in his word, to help us like grasp hold of what it means to be his, belonging to him and in his world. The other one is like another, you know, famous one is being sheep with a good shepherd. And you can apply kingdom and citizen and sheep and shepherd in similar ways. But the sheep don't worry about defending themselves because they have a defender, mm-hmm. right? And he knows how to lead them to the green pastures and the still waters that they need. He knows how to restore their souls. So I that was a good point you just made. I think that is where the tension can be in our own hearts. It can feel like everything is out of control. And I think that's partly why Jesus had to tell them this parable, because he wasn't fulfilling the expectations that they would have had. Where's the army? Where's your palace? Where are your subjects? You know, like, where's your war horse? Mm-hmm. Where's the majesty that a king should have? And he didn't have any of those things.
No, because it doesn't look the way, it just doesn't look the way the world thinks it will look. And that's what we keep harping on over and over again, because I think it's the hardest thing. See, what's interesting is I think when Jesus was there, like, the Jewish people definitely thought, okay, you're going to overthrow Rome And like we've pointed out that he didn't not come to overthrow Rome.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he definitely came to overthrow Rome, but it's in a much bigger picture than they could imagine. But we have unique situations here where, you know, we have the illusion of a Christian nation where we can think that, well, we could have both. And so many times, you know, all the way through this election and just constantly in our political world, we have to be reminded that these kingdoms aren't together. Like they're not aligned with each other, and that there comes a point, like sometimes there are common interests. So sometimes you can do what would be in the kingdom also in the best interest of, you know, our neighbor or our country or anything like that. Like that does happen, but there's always going to be a point where we are called as citizens of this other kingdom, where we have to determine, you know, who are we going to serve? And you mentioned Daniel. I've actually been, I don't know why, I've just been reading in Daniel lately. That's just where I've been. And just so amazing, like how Daniel is both subversive and very much for, like he's helping the king, right? Like he's for Babylon in this weird way, but also when push comes to shove, he's a citizen of a different kingdom and he knows that. And he doesn't, he protects other, you know, it's really fascinating when he comes in and interprets the dream, but he doesn't want, like, he could have said, yeah, kill all them. They didn't know what they were doing. I'm the one that can give you the interpretation of the dream, but he doesn't do that. He says, it's actually not me. None of us could do this. This had to be delivered by God. And so, like, it's just fascinating how you never know when that moment is going to happen. We tend to think that those moments are going to happen in big ways. So it has to be like this big stand, you know, like we've talked, whether it's like a big law that gets passed or a law that you stop from getting passed, or whether it's a, you know, Roe v. Wade or marriage or any of these different things. We tend to think like, well, that's the moment, that's the crossroads, but that's not, it's the small stances that we take. It's typically the mustard seed type stances. It's not even going to look like anything like those crossroads moments and those stances that we take. Daniel's stance was about eating meat, and it was, the whole point was like, don't tell anybody. Nobody will know that I took this stance.
It wasn't a public protest.
No, it wasn't a public protest. It was a private honoring of God, and also wanting to protect the guard that was there, you know, just say like, I know that this could cause, so you tell us, if we look weaker than anybody else, then we'll actually change what we're doing. I think there's so many levels that this mustard seed, so the kingdom, yes, comes as a mustard seed, but then this idea of small things become big things, it applies in so many areas. And you think about, like, imagine, for example, the way you interact at the, like, say you go to vote, and the way you interact with the volunteers who are there and the people who are in line is likely far more significant in the kingdom than who you actually vote for. It's wild. The act, and I would even argue the act of voting is more important than who you actually vote for, because even from a political standpoint, that it's these small acts, these small interactions, and actually believing that that's more important than what the world sees as big. And I think you mentioned, I thought it was a really great thought experiment, and I thought of a twist on your thought experiment of, I really liked how you said, like, imagine if Jesus said the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if the parable, like, what would it be like if it was this kingdom of the world? And if he said, like, and so I just wrote, I was writing things down and was thinking, like, here, you know, you might have said, like, the kingdom of God is like Lambeau Field, you know, majestic. Uh-huh. And when it's full, like, there is, you know, it is loud and raucous, and everyone, you know, is excited to be there or whatever.
And our team wins.
And our team wins, right? Like, it's... which right now you could, you know, more or less, it would be funny to throw a jab at the Packers right now. But, or we'd be like, it's like, the seven wonders of the world, all, or the eight wonders of the world, all combined into one, like built on top of each other. Or it's like the, you know, the pyramids, or it's like the Capitol and the Pentagon and the White House all together. Like he could, there would be these images of like these massive, you know, it's like Pike's Peak. Like he could have gone natural.
Thinking mountains.
Yeah. He could have gone like, it's even greater. It's like, the kingdom of God is like the sun that just like, oh, and the wild thing is it is.
It will grow to become, right?
It is. Like, but that's not what, how he chose to communicate it. And so I thought that was a really great experiment. And then the other part of that, and I'm curious what you think about this, but another twist on that is I think, so that hits on our perspective of realizing that he really did mean what he said. Like it wasn't about how big a mustard plant gets, right? Mm-hmm. It was about how small it starts.
Yes.
And the difference of what it looks like to what it will be. Mm-hmm. That's what mattered to him. But also I was thinking about if this was a worldly parable, and imagine if you wanted to communicate in a worldly way, how small things become big things, you would communicate it in a way that has much more instant gratification. Hmm. You know, it'd be like a parable. I could imagine like an Aesop's fable or something where like you do have that, like where there's a will, there's a way, and you know, slow and steady wins the race.
Yes.
So think about the tortoise and the hare. So that just pops in my head. The tortoise and the hare, slow and steady wins the race. But I think if Jesus was telling that kingdom, it would be like the turtle would end up losing and dying. And still saying like, but slow's better. Mm. Slow and steady is better. Like imagine finding, you know, having a fable or a parable where you find a wallet and you need, and you have some big medical bill that you have to pay, and you know, it's $1,000 medical bill, and you find a wallet that has $1,000 in cash in it, and you actually know who it belongs to, and it belongs to someone wealthy, someone that doesn't even like that, you know, is frivolous their money. That $1,000 is like a dollar to them. If the world was telling that parable and trying to be a moral parable, they would say like, so you return the wallet, and the person joyfully gives you $1,000, and you know, and more, you know, and then it connects you with the best doctors, and so that you're actually, you know, your child is cured of their disease. Like that's the way the world would tell the parable. And I think if Jesus was telling that parable, it'd be like, you return the wallet and he has you arrested because he accuses you of stealing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the ends justify the means. The idea, we want to believe, even if we believe small things. So your thought experiment was like confronting the perception of this. But I think we also have to confront the perception that, yeah, so if you do that small thing, you'll end up winning.
Yes.
You'll end up like...
Well, it'll feel like you are.
It'll feel like you're winning. Yeah, and like, I just was thinking about how would he tell that parable? It's like, well, that doesn't feel like you won at all.
Yeah. No, and we talked, I mean, I didn't get to, it's just this time, you know, in a sermon, but you and I had talked about, you know, if Jesus wanted to use another plant to convey that too, he could have like used a cedar tree that they had at the time, or maybe here we would use a little acorn into this massive oak. Like, I think that conveys it better than if we're going for just the immediate gratification, even though it's going to take a while, it's going to be amazingly beautiful compared to a mustard plant. I mean, what's an oak compared to a mustard plant? You know, think about the difference between those things. But yeah, you're right. I mean, again, that's why this is ultimately going to come down to faithfulness and love for the King, who is everything for us and to us. And I think that's what separates any, because you could also apply the small things become big things. And there's people who their entire career is that now, where they are, you know, into self-improvement. Take these steps, these small steps in your life, and your life will become, you just fill in the blank, whatever you could imagine it could become. But the way that those are so different from the kingdom is they always are encouraging you that what is in your best interest is to focus on you and yourself and your kingdom.
Yeah.
And that's just so different than what Jesus calls us into. It's radically different.
It is radically different. I'm thinking of a parable, a worldly parable that would, you know, and we see this a lot. We see this example a lot, that you are honest, you know, a worker is honest that and gives credit to somebody else who actually did the work. You know, they're praised for the work, but they know somebody else did it. And so they're honest and they give praise. And so the boss, so impressed with their honesty, promotes them, you know, and Jesus tells parables like that too, like, you know, seeking the lower seat at the banquet or at the wedding table. Like, don't, like, come seek the lower seat and then you'll be moved up and that'll be better. So it's not, but the question is, which kingdom are you expecting that? Because you're right. I think it does come down to that, is if I am doing this, like if my view of small things become big things, that what I mean by the big things is my personal kingdom here on earth, well, then that's not always going to work out.
Mm-mm.
Sometimes it does. Like sometimes the boss does notice that and does appreciate that. And sometimes you might get the promotion. Sometimes the CEO that runs their company as a shadow of the kingdom and makes sure that their employees are taken care of and they operate it honestly and everything. Sometimes their company succeeds and sometimes they don't because of that. Sometimes the choice is, I can be faithful to God's kingdom and lose my business, or I can compromise that and compromise it a little bit so that, you know, we can survive. And man, we don't just see that in politics. We do see that all the time in politics, of like, better to compromise our kingdom status so that we can live to fight another day, you know, or so that we stay, like, so that we keep our power and our, you know, all these worldly economies. But you also see it, in just how we function in the workplace and in our neighborhoods and all kinds of things. It's like we are willing to go about things in the way of the kingdom as long as it doesn't mean we lose, as long as it's a way to ultimately win in the world's eyes, then we're okay with it. But if it looks like, well, we're not going to, you see it with churches all the time where they, you know, well, I know, I mean, talking to pastors over the years, and the stresses that are on them. Like, what do you do when the budget is not, like, when you don't have the finances? What do you do when people aren't coming, you know, or when your church isn't growing numerically? Like, what do you do? Do you compromise and start believing in that it's the big things that bring about the kingdom, or do you stay faithful in the small things? And I can tell you, the autopsy of every church that I've known that has strayed off the path, I said before, they listen to the wrong people. So they listen to the people who do not believe in the kingdom ultimately. Like, they're not all in on the kingdom. And they start buying into the world's economy of what looks big. And so they try to make it look big to the world. So we try to make big splashes. We try to draw big crowds. We try to make a big show. We try to, like, we want it to look big in the world's eyes, because the faithfulness and the small things, just that doesn't grow, put a lot of people in the seats a lot of times. It doesn't bring in a lot of money. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't build buildings.
It doesn't stroke our egos.
It doesn't stroke our egos.
I mean, right? And let's be honest, even when we are trying to resist that is just a human temptation, right? And that's another way of saying our kingdom, right? Whenever we talk about human pride or comfort, you know, or even when we think about winning, like when this is a battle we're in, and are we going to win? If we don't take matters and you know, yeah, go off a different way, we are often not thinking of Jesus's interests there. It's it's similar, right? We've talked about this before on here about, you know, when you get done with a Sunday morning worship and the question gets asked, so how was it today? Do we answer that from the perspective of how we felt about it, or do we answer it by saying, well, how do you think God felt? And I think if you could apply the same sort of question to the kingdom in our lives. So, what do you think God's wringing his hands over right now in my life, in this world? And I think that you'll get similar answers if you reframe it that way. And I think that's a lot of what Jesus is doing as he sanctifies us, is giving us the perspective. And I mean, ultimately, it's a reminder of how good and loving God is, because we just doubt that constantly. We can say we believe it, but we just really doubt it when it comes to the things in life that we value the most, we really can doubt that. But I think as he transforms us and we learn more and more, man, he is more loving than we could ever imagine towards us. And he has what is good for us in mind every moment of our lives. And his steadfast love never ceases or wavers or decreases for us. And this is what's good. And so the more we learn that and internalize that and feel that, the more we are able to say, well, what do you think God thinks about this? How does this make him feel? And then what does he want me to do in response to that? And I think that's in large part of what it looks like to grow as a kingdom citizen, is our hearts are transformed in that way. And that's why I think a lot of times the small things that become big things start with adjustments on our own heart. Like they are really our own heart being transformed as we submit more and more of it to him. That's where that oftentimes the small thing will have to begin for us.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I was just thinking of that example of even when it comes to our faith and even when it comes to practicing obedience. So like the small to big, part of it is an awareness thing, being aware of the small things. Part of it then is a valuing thing of saying, okay, well, not only am I aware of this small act of faithfulness, but I actually value it more than these other things. But then it's actually then an obedience thing, mm-hmm. of, okay, well, in the faithfulness, in the belief, in the awareness of these small things, and then the faith to value that is then faithful obedience to then live that out. And when I think about that, just even in abiding in Jesus, there are, you know, it reminds me of when I ask people, hey, how would you describe like your relationship with God right now? And 9 times out of 10, I'm going to get a list of things that are noticeable from the outside. Well, I haven't been to church lately, or, you know, I haven't read the Bible as much as I should, or they're all things that somebody else could observe. Now, those things are all important. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, it doesn't matter if you go to church, it doesn't matter if you read your Bible. But the small acts, like, rarely does somebody say to me, you know, my heart is just not really inclined towards God right now. Or I've not felt his presence. I've struggled to believe his promises lately, or I actually am really hungry. I want to know him more. Or we never describe our heart condition because we don't think those are the things that we're really asking about. I mean, I think a lot of people just have to deal with that, when I ask somebody how they're doing, they're immediately going to talk to me about their church attendance because they think that like that's what I'm valuing. But it's not. I mean, good heavens. You don't have to be in ministry for very long to know that church attendance is like, it's a thing, right? It is true that people who are abiding in Jesus want to be together with the body of Christ. Like that is true. That I think it's kind of one of those, like, not all squares are rectangles, but all,
yes.
Or not all rectangles are squares, but all squares are rectangles kind of mm-hmm. a thing. So everyone who is abiding in Jesus and pursuing him wants to be with the people of God, declaring and praising and worshiping him. But not everybody who comes to church is actually abiding in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about non-believers. That's a totally different thing. I'm saying people who believe and would consider themselves a disciple or consider themselves a Christ follower.
And you can apply that same thing to any spiritual discipline, right? So like Bible reading. So there's ways of approaching Bible reading that are totally lifeless. And there's ways approaching the Bible that will bring power and joy and pleasure into your relationship with God that you couldn't imagine. But it's what's going on in the heart in that moment. So I think it's a similar dynamic with Sunday worship. It's why are we doing this? And what is the purpose and function of it? And to the extent that the reason we're doing it is to connect with and enjoy and worship our King, we will experience all of those things as life-giving means of grace, means of experiencing his power in the world, encountering his forgiveness and healing. If they are human ways of getting approval from other humans or just dealing with a guilty conscience, they are not going to, they might you know, soothe your conscience temporarily, but you aren't going to experience the life and power of the kingdom by doing it that way.
No. And so because we're talking about this in light of politics, what does that look like? I mean, one other thing, kind of last thing I was thinking about was just, if we really believe in these small things become big things, one of the really practical applications, especially when we're talking about politics, is going local. And you mentioned that and touched on that. But I'm just thinking about this, that we think the big things are the stances we take or what we post on social media. But when I think of small things that become big things in like just our politics, it'd be, imagine going to a city council meeting when you don't have an agenda. I mean, those have got to be the most boring things.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had to go to a meeting or a school board meeting or anything like that, we're used to people going when you've got something to say.
You get fired up.
Yeah. Which is fine. Not saying that we shouldn't do that, but imagine what it would be like if there are a group of people that just went and took it upon themselves to say, I'm just going to be here. And then when everything's done, I'm going to go up and thank the people for serving and just let them know that they could be doing other things with their Tuesday night, you know, or whatever, but I appreciate their willingness to serve. Imagine over time, if a group of people kept doing that, and they just became noticed as like, and then someone else imagine somebody else visiting from some other town and like coming in there and being like, who's that group of people? Oh, they just come to support us and encourage us. Every once in a while, they speak up about something, sometimes positively, sometimes, you know, negatively, you know, sometimes they push against something and sometimes they're supportive of it, but they're always mm-hmm. supportive of us and they take an interest.
They're invested in this. Yep.
Man, I like that's something that I think about. You know, I think about obviously volunteering in the local community. I think anything that we think is a national issue, I mean, one way to do this is, so this would be another twist on the parable, but imagine anything that you think is a major issue that is actually about loving your neighbor, right? So there are a lot of issues that we would say, man, this does have an impact on my neighbor. It matters what we think about this and how we view this in the kingdom. Because, you know, often it pertains to the image of God. Like, you know, people are made in the image of God. And as image bearers, we are meant to care for them and protect the least of these and speak for those who can't speak and all those things. So imagine something at a national level, and then ask yourself, what does that look like at a small local level?
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like to be faithful to this idea? Not what does it look like to influence this policy or push this agenda or, you know, whatever, but what does it actually look like at a very localized, a hyper localized level that to value whatever it is that we would say we value in that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And I think being okay, it doesn't mean that then, so what we're trying to say this every week, but we're not saying don't vote on those things.
No.
But there are ways we can engage that right where we are. And I think the remembering the mustard seed helps us remember that our responsibility isn't just to vote and advocate for it, it's to actually practice it and to live that in our lives daily. And there are ways we can do that. There really are. And there's beautiful ways we can band together
mm-hmm.
to do that, you know? And that's what I think one of the great opportunities in all this is, in examining the kingdom in light and in light of politics and like you're saying, describing it that way, is that we can see, you know what? We aren't in this alone. And I didn't even get to go into that part, but we aren't in this alone. When we take these little steps, yeah, we do have to make a personal decision to take the step, but we don't have to take those steps alone. Other people are also longing for that. And that's why I like that example of going to a city council meeting, but not by yourself. Come with right. other people. Not because you need a gang who's going to, but like a gang of people who erratically love is really powerful.
Yeah.
It really is.
That almost makes me excited enough to be willing to go, but not quite excited enough. But maybe somebody that's hearing that says, like, that's what I feel called. And that's what you're talking about, being banding together. Because the reality is, the mustard seed is a tiny seed. And then our portion of that is so tiny. And so it can feel like one of the ways that we get into trouble is when we think, okay, well, I'm going to be faithful in this small way. And I think everyone else needs to also be faithful in that small way. And I would just say, well, maybe that's just you and a few people, you know? So, you know, for example, you might say, okay, a big issue is, you know, obviously caring for the poor and social programs and everything. You might say, well, no, we have to vote against this because, you know, for these reasons, and or we have to vote for this. But what does it look like to address poverty in my community? What does that look like? And you might say, you know what, I'm gonna be faithful and I'm gonna serve at the food bank. They always need volunteers.
Yes.
I'm gonna serve here at Ruby's Pantry. And that's great. But then you can look at everybody else and be like, why isn't everybody else doing this? Everyone else should realize, well, that's because they might be the one who says, I'm gonna go to the city council meeting. And another person might say, I'm going to go volunteer at the pregnancy center and try to meet young moms where they are and let them know that there's another option. And someone else might say, I'm going to volunteer with Welcomed, and I'm going to come alongside of a foster family and be a part of it. That's how I'm going to look at this pro-life situation and say, like, I want to make sure I'm supporting those who are taking care of the fatherless and the motherless in our community. And in all of those ways, we are being faithful in the small things. And so part of the way small things become big things is God ordaining it that it grows. But also he does that through all of our acts of faithfulness adding up together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about just our church. I had somebody came in and met with me that is not a part of our church. And he said, I wanted to meet with you because the word on the street is that this church cares about the practical needs in the community. And I was thinking, man, that's pretty great reputation. Well, why do we have that reputation? It's not because of what happens here on Sunday morning or Wednesday night. It's because of the people in our church family who week after week, day after day, are doing the small things, and they all add up. So now all of a sudden, it's the CASA volunteer with the Welcomed volunteer, with the person that works at the shelter, with the person who teaches in the school, with the person who, you know, works at the hospital. And like all of their little acts of faithfulness, all of our little acts of faithfulness just keep adding up and adding up and adding up. And pretty soon there's like this, it looks a little bigger, and then it looks different. And people say, what's going on there? Because everywhere I turn, that's what I get really excited about. I think everywhere someone turns, and forget about Faith Church, just think like the kingdom.
Yep.
What it would look like in this area where everywhere someone turns, they run into a kingdom citizen who is valuing small things, who does like these small acts of faithfulness. Like it adds up.
Yeah, it's powerful.
It's really powerful.
And God takes in his power and in his, you know, ways that are mysterious to us, but he takes small things and he multiplies them so that it is apparent to all that what is happening is beyond the people. It's beyond even the multiplying effect. It's like he takes those acts and he can multiply them. And Jesus does this in the Gospels. You don't have to read long to see him doing that, multiplying things that they shouldn't have added up to be what they were. I mean, even thinking about the loaves that he used to feed so many people, or the few fishes, there's just these examples where he can take an ordinary thing and he can multiply it in ways that are beyond our expectation. And I think we need to expect that he will and look for that sort of fruit when it's a multiplying effect that goes far beyond human effort or ingenuity or strength, because that glorifies our King. He gets to demonstrate he's active. We can alert people that he's reigning.
So, yeah. And so I think here's the twist on the whole thing. When I sit there and think like it's a oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, what is it when they have like a twist? Oh, plot twist. There you go. Plot twist. The reward is immediate. And in the sense that abiding with Christ is the reward. He's the reward.
Yes. It's right? What are we expecting to get?
Right. It's so when your desire is to just be known by him and to commune with him, and when abiding in him is what is the source of our peace and our joy and our life. And so when we talk about being able to experience abundant life or joy or peace, the way of the kingdom is the way that leads to life. And as long as our view of what life is money or power or status or even comfort or security or a successful, you know, a successful business or a successful church, anything like that, as long as that is it, then we're not guaranteed any of that. We don't know any of that's going to happen. It may happen, it may not happen, whatever. But then we also need to remember that it's not just a mustard plant that is way off in eternity somewhere. He actually is, like, he's the reward. And when you do it's both this delayed gratification and instant gratification. So when we do a small act of faithfulness, there is a delayed gratification of that, where we believe that this will bear fruit someday. Like, this is a seed that is planted that will bear fruit. But it's also an immediate, in God's kindness, it is an instant gratification where you can feel his good pleasure in that moment. That in that moment, when rather than repaying evil with evil, you seek the lower seat and you let the person get away with saying that thing to you, and you don't fire back the comment, that you actually serve them or that you are charitable to them, that the immediate reward is that the Holy Spirit is dwelling in you and says, well done, good and faithful servant. Like, there is an immediate abiding. It's not like he's going to remember it someday, or I'm going to submit this report, or the angels are going to submit a report and Jesus eventually will come across on his desk and say, hey, good job back there. He's with you. And man, I'm telling you, when I am practicing the presence of Jesus and realize that he is with me, the small acts, like, bear immediate fruit. In way, some of the fruit is delayed, but some of the fruit is immediate. If that makes sense. Like, it's both and. And isn't that incredible, his kindness in that? It's both and.
It is. And I think that's why it's important for us to be expecting that can be ours. That mm-hmm. right now, living in the kingdom is not just a theoretical idea, and that there's some people who just are really good at pushing through difficult things and just delaying any pleasure forever. It's not that, actually. It's that right now we can live in the kingdom and enjoy his presence and enjoy his companionship and his power and love and joy. And yes, it's now and not yet. It's not the fullness of it yet. Right. It really isn't. But it's actually tangible. It is. And again, if we read the Gospels and we look at the way people responded to Jesus when they encountered him, they did not need to be convinced that they wanted to follow him. It was the best thing that had ever happened to them. Experiencing his life and his power changed their lives. And you have to imagine that they didn't stop experiencing that. It wasn't like they had that one moment. And sometimes I think that happens. Like, we have this moment of conversion and we just kind of try to live off that. And we are meant to experience him daily. So his mercies are truly new every morning, and we need to bank on that. Just like manna, right? Every day he provides manna, the bread of heaven, every single day. And we need to be nourished with that every day. And when we are, I do think doing the small thing that might not always appear like it's doing anything at all, and the thing is not getting fixed at all, we will still be able to delight in doing that because we're experiencing him.
It's really incredible. And so we gave a lot of examples of how we do that together. So we just remind you again, we aren't meant to do this alone. We want you to to connect. If you need help doing that, or if you have a question that you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, you can let us know by emailing us at connect@faithpastorgo.com, or you can fill out a communication card on a weekend or online, and we can get that that information, and then just join us. Be together with us as we worship together. Be together with us as we share a meal together. The different things that we do, and talk to one another about the small things. What a neat conversation starter that people could have is what are some small acts of faithfulness that God has called you to this week? It might stir our creativity and stir our just desire to see the kingdom come, and our confidence that, oh, I'm not alone out there doing this small thing.
I love that question. Okay, so that is the way that spiritual friendships are forged and strengthened. It's conversations like that.
Yeah.
Because then that leads to all kinds of other things that are meaningful. And I think that's something we all long for, but we will not have that unless we have those sorts of conversations where we are asking each other. And not in a, I think when we ask that question, you, depending on your experience, you might immediately think of that being a kind of punitive or accountability sort of thing. No, it's expecting that God is active. And you're like, how did that go? How did you enjoy him this week? And some weeks we're going to say, this is the way. And some weeks we're going to say, I don't know if I did it all. I need you to pray for me. I'm missing those things. I'm not seeing it. And so we need both kind of conversations. And spiritual friendships can grow out of those. So yeah, that was a great example, Jay. I wish I had thought of that question for the sermon.
For the sermon and earlier in the podcast.
Sake.
Well, and thinking about that, even when we were talking about the awareness and the valuing and the obedience, if we did ask that question of each other, you might say, wow, this was an area where I did feel like God called me to be faithful, and by his grace I was, and it was incredible. But you might say, man, I'm not seeing it. Like you said, I need help with awareness, or it might lead to confession where you say, I saw opportunities and I just didn't value it enough in that moment. I had an excuse. I did something else, or I gave in and I said the harsh thing back. And so it might lead to, you know, confessing your sins to one another. It might be confessing weakness and saying, I saw it and I wanted it, but I didn't have the faith to follow through, or I didn't follow through. No matter what, it has the potential to be a really incredible conversation together. And yeah, you're right. That's how spiritual friendships are forged. And what excites me about that, and I'm thinking about it, is, man, so many people have such a hard time knowing how to talk about spiritual things with one another. I think that's one of the powerful things about how we do communion, is that in that time of waiting in line and everything, like, we're giving some parameters. We're saying, like, don't talk about football. Don't talk about, you know, just the regular things that you go to, because it's so tempting for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's safer to talk about biking or football or work or whatever, but not in a kingdom way. And I just think, man, what would it look like to shift that. And so this is a way that you could do that. It's also a way you could do that by asking about those kinds of acts of faithfulness in the thing that you'd normally talk about. Like, hey, when you were at work this week, you know, rather than just saying, hey, how's work going? How has abiding in Christ looked at work this week?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, and maybe people say, like, well, that sounds weird to say that or whatever. We'll come up with a different way to say it. Like, man, it could totally radically, I feel like we just tripped onto something and stumbled on something. So hopefully if you stuck with us in this podcast, you got to the nugget at the end.
Yeah. And hopefully, I think our energy level is a little higher than it was at the beginning, which is good.
It always is.
It's exciting.
It always is. Like you said, you started it by just saying small act of faithfulness.
Yep.
Before we got on air, Jeff just looked at me and he's like, small things. We need to practice this obedience right now. Cause it's hard sometimes. Like, we don't always feel like it, and we don't always know what we're going to say, cause we don't script the podcast. Maybe we should. Some people would say, maybe you should have a better outline. But
have you thought about it? Yes, most we have thought about it.
Sometimes we jot down some ideas and we might throw them and say, hey, I want to ask you about this. But most of the time it's just hit record and go, because mm-hmm. we just like, all right, whatever. If we have a question, we'll work that in or whatever. But so hopefully that is helpful. We hope all of this has been helpful. Again, let us know if you need help connecting or if you have questions, and share your stories. Like if you took this nugget here at the end and start working that into conversations of, hey, what have mustard seed moments? Maybe that's the question. Anyway, like remember the mustard seed, like you said, it's like remember the Alamo, which that was kept going through my head, but remember the mustard seed. But ask people about, like, were there any mustard seed moments at work this week or in your home, or like where did you see them? And I just, man, I can imagine people sharing stories about small acts of faithfulness in their homes, in their neighborhoods, in their workplaces, at the ball field, like all these different places, and how encouraging that would be to hear that from one another, and to exhort one another, and to hear confession from one another, and to pray for one another, all based around that.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Be great. So hopefully you're able to do that. Share your stories with us as you do that. And we appreciate you taking the time to listen today. And until next time, grace and peace.